the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Here's your host, Jim Poplava.
Well, we are in springtime, or at least close to springtime, and everybody's going to be thinking about summer vacations and, of course, travel. Well, that is the subject of today's interview, but we're going to talk about a special kind of travel, living the RV life. Joining me on the program is Mark and Julie Bennett. They are authors of a book called Living the RV Life, Your Ultimate Guide to Life on the Road. Mark and Julie, before we start, I guess if you want to get into having an RV, it's an expensive toy for most individuals. I guess you have to make some decisions. How are you going to use it? Are you going to, as some people do, sell their home? As I had one client do and live in an RV for 5 years, traveling the country. Is it going to be something you just take off for a couple of weeks at a time with the kids or just you and the wife? So let's talk about getting into the RV life. What are some important questions an individual needs to ask themselves before they begin?
Well, thanks so much for having us on, first of all, Jim. But it's a lot of those questions you were starting to have there, for us, they all seem to center around finding your why. That's what we like to go back to, is finding your why you're going to do this travel. Are you doing it for a big exploration, a big journey? Are you planning on doing it full-time, long-term? Or are you just out for weekending? You know, what is it that you're trying to do with the lifestyle will drive a lot of those decisions on how you do the lifestyle.
You know, one thing that Mark and Julie, that we've seen with our clients, we describe retirement in three phases. Age 65 to 75, we call the go-go years. Age 75 to 85, the go-slow years, and 85 and beyond, no-go years. And so what I've seen with my clientele, a lot of clients, as they get into their 60s, they retire in their 70s, were the rigors of travel, you know, getting on a plane, sitting in coach for 13 hours to go across the pond can be arduous on many elder people. And so they have found the RV lifestyle is much more accommodative and easier.
Yeah, we're finding that too, Jim, in that, you know, it's traditionally been considered that RVing is for retirees, but of course a lot of people are retiring younger these days too. A lot of our audience and readers are retiring as young as in their 50, 55, even 50. And then some people, of course, are having to work a little later, especially after the economy tanked 10 years ago. They've had to put off their retirement dreams. But the great thing about the RV life is it's really affordable, really, no matter what your life stage or your budget. And I think that's one of the things we love about it, is that you can find a way to RV depending on what your financial situation is, but you always have your home with you, so it's much more comfortable. You've always got your own bed, your own pillow, your dishes, your clothes. You're not living in and out of suitcases and lugging them in and out of hotels and rental cars. And another big factor that is appealing for a lot of people is being able to take your pets with you. And a lot of people have dogs or cats, or we've even seen people traveling with pigs and iguanas and all kinds of creatures. And to be able to take your pets with you as you travel is a huge appeal for a lot of people doing this. And a lot of people too find that they have family around the country, whether they're kids or grandkids in different parts of the US or even Canada. It's easier to go and visit those that you really want to spend more time with, but you're in your own home. You don't have to be, you know, burdening someone else by staying in a spare room or outstaying your welcome.
Well, and to Julie's point on being in your own home, it also is a big impact on timeline. You know, when you're traveling with the airlines and you're traveling with hotels, you're at the mercy of other people's schedule. But in the RV, you have a lot more flexibility to decide your own timeline, in that you can adjust it continually over and over. And in fact, even if there's a traffic jam or something like that, or there's some weather conditions that might delay travel, it's not as much of an inconvenience because you actually have all the comforts of home with you at all times.
Yeah, and also when you're on the road and you have all that space, you know, one person that isn't driving can take a nap or exercise, so you're not stuck in a seat like you are on an airliner. I want to, before we begin talking about the appropriate type of RV to get, I wonder if you might tell us a little bit about your story and share that with our listeners, because you're both young. And you decided to pack it up, and you actually, your RV is your home.
It is, Jim. In fact, we're coming up for 5 years on the road full time now. You might have already detected I am Australian and I've been living in the US for 10 years. Mark's from Colorado. We met in Colorado back in 2010 and it was 2014 when we sold our Colorado townhome and decided to hit the road. And there were a few reasons for that. You know, Mark had a job. He was working from home and I was actually in between jobs at the time. And we had a dog that was, we don't have kids. So she was our baby. We wanted to travel more, but we didn't want to leave our dog behind, which we'd have to do with international travel. And we just wanted more travel and adventure in our life. And RVing just seemed like a great way to do that. We both love to drive. We love the open road. And it was just seemed like a more affordable way to do it too. And just because of Mark's work, working 8 to 5 central time, traveling internationally was also going to be a bit more difficult with the time zone. So RVing just really made a lot of sense for us. And by the time we started talking about it and doing our research and decided to sell our town home and bought an RV and hit the road, I think the process was about 9 months. Was when we were moving at a pretty brisk pace, I would say, to do that. But we drove off in June 2014, have traveled to all, we've visited all 50 states in that time. In fact, I think we'd done them all within the first 3.5 years. And that was all while still working full time. So, you know, we're still going strong. We're going back doing it all over again. But, you know, that's one of the great things is that so many people now, you know, our age, we're in our 40s. You know, we know people from their 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, all the way up to 70s, and actually even in their 80s still are being. So it's really unique, I think, in the number of people from all of the different demographics and life stages that can do this now because technology makes it possible. If you're working, you're able to work remotely. A lot of families are out there doing it, road schooling their kids. So it's really diverse community out there now on the road.
Absolutely.
Can I ask you, you've been doing it now for close to 5 years. Is anything changed in those 5 years in terms of your learning experience? You have a website, you've written this book. Anything you're doing different in terms of coaches that you have or the RV that you have now than when you started?
Yeah, well, there's been a lot of things that we've seen change over the years. We have seen a wider and wider demographic coming out to be extended travel being a wider age range. But as far as changes for us personally, we have recently changed our RV. We first hit the road with a newer RV. And then earlier in 2018, about 3 years ago, we switched that up and bought a significantly older RV. In fact, a 20-year-old RV. And did a major renovation on it this last summer, which was really fun to make it truly our own. And part of that was because we're in this lifestyle longer term. And so we wanted something that was very personalized and felt very homey for us.
And a couple other factors for that is we were about 3.5 years in when Mark quit his job, Jim. So he was working as a director of operations for a company out of Texas. And then RV Love, our blog and our YouTube channel, it was growing so much that it became too much for me to just still handle on my own. And we were kind of at a tipping point. Mark was ready to leave his job anyway. I think it was getting pretty stressful and long hours and was starting to really impact his life and his well-being. And so we said, well, let's just go for it. So he quit his job and we decided to create an online school. We called it RV Success School. So it was online classes for people to be able to take to learn about the RV life. So it really helps fast track their learning and sets them up to make really sound decisions before they make such big and expensive decisions. And then that led to the publisher reaching out to us just a little over a year ago and asking us to write the book, Living the RV Life, Your Ultimate Guide to Life on the Road. So a lot has changed for us personally and and having that more flexibility in our schedule now that we're fully self-employed is what allowed us more time to be able to even consider taking on an RV renovation because there's no way we would have done that. We were new. We didn't have the time. We wanted to travel and we just...
Or the knowledge because we were learning a lot. And that's like you said with the online school, that was a big reason why we created that is because it can be such a steep learning curve and that we really wanted to help dramatically shorten that learning curve for others.
Mm-hmm. Now, I want to get into, in your book, you have a chapter on the different kind of RVs. You have Class A, B, Class C, you've got toy haulers, you've got fifth wheels. I mean, how does one really determine what kind of RV you should be in. Because one of the things that you point out in your book, especially if you buy a new one, the minute you drive it off the lot, you've just lost about 20%. So if you're in it for a couple of weeks or months and decided you made the wrong decision, it's going to be expensive to trade that in.
Yeah, and a lot of that does depend on how you want to travel, because if you want to be very nimble, someone might look at a Class B, like you mentioned, that Sprinter van. And it's very nimble travel style. You can move very frequently every couple of days, and you're able to take your RV with you into national parks, into state parks, into your daily trips, your exploring trips, versus people with a large fifth wheel, maybe even a toy hauling fifth wheel that brings large toys like ATVs and stuff, and might stay somewhere for a longer period of time, maybe even an entire season. And so they want to be more planted and have that extra homey feel of a large fifth wheel. So very different travel styles. And you mentioned that earlier that it's nice to have maybe a Class A motorhome that's more the bus type that you travel down the road with. That's what we have. And the conveniences of that, where the passenger can actually get up while traveling and use the restroom, make some food, or
I've actually cooked a chicken pot pie in the convection oven while we were driving from Pennsylvania to Washington,
D.C. I'll tell you what, though, that last 30 minutes of the drive was tough because I was still wanting to go eat my food. But a lot of it's just how you want to travel and what's the most important to you. Some people might be traveling with kids or with a larger group of folks, and so they need to have an RV that's large enough to have sleeping capacity for
right,
that.
Like whether it's bed over the cat or bunk houses, that kind of a thing. So it really does come down to asking yourself these questions about what's important to you, how do you plan to use it, how often do you plan to use it, who's traveling in it, and obviously your budget as well. But really, you can pretty much find most RVs in almost any price point if you're willing to go older. I mean, we went from a 2012, a two-year-old RV when we started out, and it took a few years of experience to feel a lot more confident in buying an older. We bought a very high quality older RV that we felt that okay, we can deal with that and any little quirks that she might have. And she does have some quirks.
She does.
All RVs do. I think people need to realize that too. It's not like buying a car where you drive it off the lot and you buy a brand new car. And, for the most part, you shouldn't have any major mechanical issues with that for quite a period of time. RVs are not like that. And that is one of the...
That's a definite caveat we'd want to put out there, because a lot of people have that misinterpretation that they're like cars, because you put them in a car in the ignition, you start driving. RVs are so much more complex. It's a house and a car. And Julie often relates it to a brand new home that's built, and that they always have a punch list of things that need to be fine-tuned, similar with an RV.
I want to talk about that because, you have the Class B that's almost like a van. It's easy to, it would be probably the closest to driving a car. What about a Class A? I've seen them from 30 feet all the way to 45 feet. Now, you walk into a 45-footer and you're thinking, boy, if I wanted to travel on the road, that's the ideal size, because you have so much more room, closet, living space. Isn't that more difficult to park and drive in, number one? And number two, are there limitations in terms of where you can go with a 45-footer versus, let's say, a 35-footer?
Yeah, those 45-footer RVers are very palatial. And to your comment on open road, they actually are amazingly planted because they ride on air suspension and they're very heavy. So nothing drives as smooth as heavy. So they're really great for that. But they are more difficult in maneuvering in tight spaces into campgrounds. And you will see some restrictions in park availability. In fact, we saw some statistics that were mostly state parks, national parks, where you can have 70% of the sites are available for a 40-footer and only 17% of the sites were available for 45s. So you do see some restrictions in where you can park them, but you might need a little bit more trip planning, a little bit more thought in your travel, but they definitely aren't as tough to drive as some people may first appear, especially on open road.
And of course, there's RV driving schools available where you can learn how to do that and get comfortable behind the wheel. And, we actually haven't done that ourselves. Mark's done a lot of driving of large vehicles over the years. I used to drive stretch limousines. You've driven a lot of big trucks.
Yeah, so I was used to the dynamics of larger vehicles, so it wasn't as much of a stretch for me, but I do think it's a really good idea for some folks because a lot of states don't even require a different license. Some states require a different license, but there's many states you can drive into a lot in a smart car and drive off in that 45-footer. that's a little scary sometimes, but... Yeah.
We see the same thing in the boating market. People just get in a boat and they think it's like driving a car, and there's so many things that are more to it. I want to talk about, in terms of size, quality, and then also I want to talk about the navigation and safety capabilities. Like in my car, I have lane-changing radar, collision radar. On my boat, I have weather control systems. I have navigation charts. What about an RV?
Well, you know, you mentioned that adaptive cruise control and lane departure. They actually are starting to show up on some of the very high-end Class A motorhomes right now, and you might see it on some Class Bs. So that technology is starting to show up, but for the most part, that doesn't exist, especially if you're looking, you know, just a few years old. And it sounds like most of what you've been looking at is in motorized RVs, because there's a whole other world of RVs that you tow behind a truck or a vehicle.
Yeah, we've seen that, you know, and especially now driving on the freeways, I noticed the cars out there, the fifth wheelers. What about, but once again, the navigation, like one of the salesmen was telling me that, for example, on certain systems, I'm not sure if it's Rand McNally, you can plug in your VIN number. It'll tell you areas or overpasses that you may not be able to clear. And it was amazing. A couple of years ago, I was filling up in a gas station at Yuma, and some guy pulled in his RV and clipped the top part of it a bit because it was taller than the gas station roof.
Yeah, you definitely need to be mindful of height restrictions. You can get GPS that will, you're able to put your height and your weight, and they will, in general, steer you away from any roads that would have restrictions on that. But I would not trust that 100%. Because they still have gaps in their data that can get you somewhere, or maybe they resurfaced a road recently. And
that's the voice of experience.
is the voice of experience. And it just depends if you're how you're traveling. You know, if you're traveling with one of those really tall RVs, you know, maybe you'll fill up your fuel tanks when you go into truck stops and stuff that you know are much larger. And then you are planted in an area, you might scout around if you're towing a vehicle behind that big RV so that you may be more mindful. Things like Google Maps can be a really great tool as well. So there's a lot of great navigational tool. Technology has made RV travel so much easier in the last 10 years than some folks previous 10 years would have had a lot of all paper maps. They wouldn't have had near the tools available to them now.
Right.
And parking them with rear view cameras makes it a whole lot easier as well.
Generally, you know, we say it's really good practice to really spend some time the night before on your route planning, because it just, when you're driving a large vehicle, especially if you're in any areas that are, you know, got heavy traffic, which, you know, happens at times, you know, we use a combination of an RV GPS. We cross-check it against what Google Maps tells us. We'll cross-check that against a Rand McNally large-scale road atlas, which is a fantastic resource, and another one that that's called a mountain directory that actually has quite a lot of detail on the grades of mountains, because a GPS and a road atlas won't tell you that. They won't tell you if it's a, you know, 7% grade over 7 miles to be able to factor that in with your braking. And so we tend to plan a lot more. Again, that was from learning the hard way when our RV GPS took us on a dirt road in the back of Wyoming somewhere that a 36-foot Class A motorhome had no business being on. But
well, and going back to earlier in our conversation with you today, Jim, is that you often have your own time flexibility, so you can choose what time you want to travel through an area that might avoid some of the heavier traffic times as well.
I want to talk about something else. I know in sailing, I have weather systems tied into my boat. So if I want to leave, the weather system will say, not a good day to go out on the ocean. And, you know, I've driven the back roads to Palm Springs. They're steep. They're very narrow. My goodness, I'd hate to drive a 35 or 45 footer on a steep mountain road.
Well, you know, it just depends on the type of RV as well. You know, we're talking about some of those larger diesel motorhomes, you know, like those 45 footers, they have exhaust brake systems that can actually, you never even touch your brakes going down those hills. You just put it in an exhaust brake and it holds your speed. So there, some of those other additional safety features actually make some of those hills even easier than the smaller RVs. Maybe not as easy as a car.
Or a gas-powered RV.
You know, one of the weather conditions you want to watch, you'd for sure want to watch out for snow and ice, and you'd for sure want to watch out for wind. But other weather conditions are usually pretty good to deal with. But again, you know, you have your home with you, similar when you had your sailing. If the weather conditions aren't suitable for travel, you know, just take advantage of the fact that you're living in your home and sit tight.
I want to move on. I read, I think it was either your book or Motorhome Magazine, there's something like 40,000 RV parks in the country. And you talk about the average price to stay in a park can be anywhere from $30 to $50 a day. I wonder if you might spend a few minutes and describe the difference in those parks. I mean, what kind of amenities and what kind of things you can find in a $30 park versus a $50 park?
Well, and that's a good question, Jim, because sometimes you would assume that a $50 park is going to be better. But again, it comes down to the area as well, what's more popular. So in those popular areas of California, you can still be paying $50 a night for a park that's not very exciting at all. In fact, we paid $100 a night for a park up in New Jersey. It was right opposite Manhattan. I mean, you could jump on a subway and be in Manhattan in 10, 15 minutes. And we're paying $100 a night, and it was nothing more than a parking lot. In fact, we opened the door of our RV, and we had to step into the neighbor's site to get out of our RV. So, you know, but if you're talking about, say, $30 to $50 a night in an area where that's similarly priced, usually the less expensive campgrounds may not have as much in the way of amenities. They may not have a swimming pool or a hot tub. It may be closer to a main road. They may be gravel. You know, they may not have sporting facilities or clubhouses, whereas something that's a bit more expensive, you might have a paved site, more level site, more spacious. Sometimes they'll have views depending on where you are. But the average campground price is around about $33 a night now nationally, and it is going up because there are more RVs. There's just more demand now, supply and demand, more people looking for that. So it's definitely increasing. I think it increased 6% from the year before, yeah, if I'm right.
And you will see lower rates for a weekly stay or a monthly stay or a seasonal stay,
right,
too. So that's something to keep in mind, too, that 33 per night is not something you have to bank on all the time.
Right. So the faster you travel, the more you're going to pay, not only in fuel, but in your camping expenses. So if we're staying at a lovely motor coach resort here at the moment in Palm Beach, Florida, in Jupiter, Florida, and it's $125 a night plus tax. But I have to tell you, it's the nicest stuffy resort we've stayed at in our 5 years of travel. And, you know, they've got brick paved sites and palm trees everywhere and a beautiful infinity pool and a gorgeous big clubhouse. And they have Friday night a social hour. It's in a really desirable area close to beaches. So that's definitely on the much higher end. I mean, this is like being in a real resort. It's much more upscale. But, you know, your average campgrounds, yeah, I'd say it's getting up there to $35 to $55 a night now. We just came back from the Florida Keys, actually, and we spent $38 a night plus tax at a state park. So you tend to find places like state parks, city and county parks, and national parks are less expensive than a lot of private parks. But, of course, national and state parks can be difficult to get into. They're so high demand. And as Mark said earlier, the size of your RV will impact your ability to get into some of those. But I think, you know, we get a lot of people asking, you know, back to your RV size for a minute, well, I don't want to get an RV bigger than 32 feet because I want to get into national parks. And our answer to that is always, well, if you're planning on living in your RV full time, how much time are you really planning on spending in those parks? Because we don't usually spend that much time inside national parks because it's hard getting a reservation. And also for us, we can't get cell connection and internet, which we need to work. And even if you're not working, even if you're retired, you still want to be able to stay connected, whether it's to news or social media or check on your share portfolio or something. But
so don't make a decision that about your RV for that will impact only the 10% of the time where you're going to stay. Make
right.
a decision based on where you're going to stay the majority of the time.
You can, and this is the great thing about having a tow vehicle, is you can park outside of a national park or outside of a really desirable area that might be a more expensive nightly rate. And if you have a tow vehicle, you can just drive in. If you don't mind a little bit of a drive in and out, then you can really save on those camping fees because you're really paying for proximity a lot of the time. I think we paid $60 a night to be near Niagara Falls.
You just mentioned a tow vehicle. So let's say, you know, I'm going to go to a beach area where I think, you know, Santa Barbara, I think I'm going to be there for a couple of weeks. It would be nice if you have your home in the park to have a small vehicle that you could just roundabout go, you know, if you have to head to the store or just see the sights. Any recommendations? And then once again, does that also depend on size? Because if you have a 45 footer, and you're towing another 15, 16 feet in a car, that's a lot of feet.
It does get you much longer length, but the tow vehicles generally track very well behind the RV. So if you can make the turn with the RV, the car will just follow suit. And if you do have a larger RV, you know, it's comfortable to carry a much heavier tow vehicle. You have much more variety in what you can tow. But if you're traveling in a Class B that has the flexibility to actually leave your campsite and go to the beach with it itself or into even closer proximity, you might just have an electric bike on a bike rack behind that B that gives you the really micro touring of an area, and then have the bus, the B van for your larger travel. But the tow vehicle, we tow, for example, a Jeep Cherokee behind our motorhome, and that's a fairly small and nimble vehicle that gives us a lot of flexibility to explore an area.
So when you're doing this, and you've been on the road now for about 5 years, have you found one type of vehicle, one type of size that tends to be more common, or is it just a wide variety? You can't basically summarize it and say, well, yeah, most people tend to have this.
Well, you know, it does obviously have a huge variety, but as far as Class A's, we see that most people are between that 35 and 40 foot range. 45s are popular in some areas, but in general, the 35 to 40 is much more common in Class A's. Class B's are all very similar sized to each other. So, and even in the towables, you know, if it depends, if there people are full timing, if people are spending the majority of the year in their fifth wheel, they'll usually have a 40 foot fifth wheel, it seems. But that 35 to 40 foot is very common for people who spend an extended time in their RVs.
But you know, RVs, they do seem to be getting bigger and bigger. And we've known a lot with, say, for example, fifth wheels that are bigger than 40 feet. And especially if you're downsizing from a home, it's really understandable, I think, to assume you need the biggest RV possible, because you're giving up a 3,000 or 4,000 square foot home and you're moving into an RV, which seems very small by comparison. But most people that we've met that have, say, for example, a fifth wheel larger than 40 feet feel it's too big. They say, you know what, it's too big to navigate and maneuver. Obviously, that's not everyone, but we're finding the majority. Most people start out thinking they need bigger, and then after being in it for a while, realize I really don't need this big, and the trade-offs are too great. And even some people with the bigger Class A's, we've got some friends with 45 footers that once they've had some experience, they say, yeah, next RV I would go smaller. So we do find that a lot of people, if they go bigger with their first RV, often, not always, will go smaller, because you just start to realize you don't need as much space.
We've definitely been seeing a trend towards smaller lately.
Yes. So. We were at the Tampa Super Show in January, and we covered a lot of RVs. We did a lot of RV tours of all of the different classes there. So if any of your listeners are interested, they can check out those videos and really get to see inside Class A's, Class B's, Class C's, travel trailers, fifth wheels. We did some walkthrough and little tours of a whole bunch of them. But we found that just based on the views, the Class B's is what a lot of people are really going for right now, whether they're full-time or snowbirds, you know, people that want to get away from the cold and get down south for the winter, or conversely, you know, escape the heat of the summer and get up north or to elevation to get some nicer temperatures in the summertime. They're just so nimble.
Yeah, they're so nimble, and they can open up different ways of travel, because you might do those smaller travel in the Class B and then actually have a rental at maybe an Airbnb property for short term. So you travel for a few weeks in your smaller RV and then stay a month in an Airbnb. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of different ways you can do this. There's so much flexibility and freedom in how you travel.
Well, we're going to continue this discussion. This is going to be a two-part series. There's just so much material we want to cover, and this book is so well written. I wanted to get to a lot more important things, everything from planning a trip, life on the road, legal issues, and also, as Mark and Julie are doing, working from the road. We will continue that next week in part two.
The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Please be advised that you invest at your own risk.